Emir Sun SC Onecept of the Oversoul 303. Psyche never saw her husband, who came only at night and departed before dawn. She begged him to permit her to look upon his face, but he declared that she must be content with his love and never try to see him. Desirous of putting at rest the worries of her family, Psyche sent for her two sisters. And these, jealous of her fortune, incited her to make an effort to see her husband. So one night when he was asleep, she lit a lamp, and carrying a knife with which to slay the evil monster described by the oracle, stole into her husband's bed chamber and discovered him to be Cupid, the son of Venus, and the most beautiful of all the gods. As she stood watching him, a drop of hot oil fell upon his body, and awakened by the pain, Cupid spread his downy wings and fled through the wind. Dao, sorrowfully reminding Psyche that love cannot dwell with suspicion. The palace thereupon vanished, and Psyche found herself in a field near her father's city. Broken-hearted, she began a quest for her lost lover, first seeking the help of Ceres, who suggested that if she go humbly to Venus and surrender to her dictates, she might regain Cupid's love. Desiring the discomfiture of Psyche, however, Venus made a servant of her, setting her almost impossible tasks, which Psyche in every instance accomplished with the assistance of sympathetic gods. Her first task was to separate a vast quantity of mixed grains, her second, to gather golden fleece from a large flock of vicious rams, and her third, to descend into Hades and bring back from Persephone, the goddess of the underworld, a casket filled with beauty. Still inquisitive, however, Psyche opened the casket in spite of the warning given her by the tower god who had aided her in the adventure. Instead of being filled with beauty, the casket contained a Stygian sleep, which loosed from the box, overcame Psyche so that she fell unconscious on the path. Cupid, coming to her rescue, returned the sleep to the box, and interceding with Jupiter for her hand, both finally reconciled Venus to the match. Psyche was then given a cup of heavenly drink. 304 Lectures on Ancient Philosophy, which conferred upon her immortality, and in common with all fairy stories, the two lovers lived happily ever afterward. In the interpretation of this fable of the soul's descent into generation, more correctly, its descent into the concept of gen Irration, we must reiterate certain of our earlier assumptions. In the words of Thomas Taylor, in the first place, the gods, as I have elsewhere shown, are superessential natures, from their profound union with the first cause, who is superessential, without any addition. But though the gods, through their summits or unities, transcend essence, yet their unities are par anticipated either by intellect alone, or by intellect and soul, or by intellect, soul, and body, from which participations the various orders of the gods are deduced. When, therefore, intellect, soul, and body are in conjunction, suspended from this superessential unity, which is the center, flower, or blossom of a divine nature, then the god from whom they are suspended is called a mundane god. The Platonists further affirmed that the human soul was born from the intellect and soul of the world, but that its direct parents were the intellect and soul of a certain star, which is its father star and from which it first descended into the sphere of non-tranquility. As the soul is suspended between intellect and body, its fall, so called, represents its inclination toward body. Therefore, the mundane soul and the intellectual, or supermundane, soul are identical in essence, but verge in opposite directions. The fall, or descent, of the soul into materiality is the result, consequently, of its contemplation of body, and conversely, its liberation from the mundane sphere, is accomplished by turning about to the contemplation of intellect. The soul is an immortal mortal, for when mingling with the immortals it shares their permanence and transcend asterisk. In C. When mingling with mortal concerns, however, it is bereft of these endowments, becoming susceptible to a certain degree of mortality by which its luminosity is destroyed and its wings are clipped. From this we understand how it is possible for a soul to fall from its estate and yet still remain in that estate, for though it may verge toward the intellect or the em erso and c concept of the Oversoul 305 body, it is still essentially in its own estate and remains soul, regardless of the nature with which it mingles. Apropos to the subject matter, we have the remarks of Aristides concerning the descent of the soul. The soul, he says, as long as she is seated in a purer place of the universe, in consequence of not being mingled with the nature of bodies, is pure and inviolate, and revolves, together with the ruler of the world, but when, through an inclination to these inferior concerns, she receives certain phantasms from places about the earth, then she gradually imbibes oblivion of the goods she possessed in her former superior station, and at the same time descends. But by how much the more she is removed from superior natures, by so much the more approaching to inferiors, is she filled with insanity, and hurled into corporeal darkness. Because through a diminution of her former dignity, she can no longer be intelligibly extended with the universe, but on account of her oblivion of supernal goods, and consequent astonishment, she is borne downward into more solid natures, and such as are involved in the obscurity of matter. Hence, when her desire of body commences, she assumes and draws from each of the superior places some portions of corporeal mixture. The same author continues his description of the descent of the soul through the orbits of the divine planets, from each of which, as in the story of Ishtar at the seven gates, and also the descent of the soul in the divine Pymander of Hermes Mare. Curious Trismegistus, the soul receives a luciform and envelop in nature. At last, approaching the sphere of the MCN, the soul becomes of such corporeality that a certain gravitation draws it into the rhythm of the physical world. The soul then loses its spherical form and assumes the human shape, the Lucy form, and ethereal substances gathered from the stars first becoming fetal membranes and later definite parts of the physical ichal structure of the outer nature and psychical qualities in the inner nature. For, as Aristides again remarks, the shell-like vestment of man is nourished from its own root, which is the descending soul. 306 Lectures on Ancient Philosophy. Psyche, or the soul, is described by Apuleius to be of royal parentage, thus arcanely intimating that she is of a divine line, for royalty here signifies the spiritual lineage. That which has its foundation in the gods is declared to be of kingly order. For the gods were the patrons of rulers who thus administered their kingly office by divine right. In contradiction, mortals were regarded as creatures of common birth to signify that their mother was the earth and they themselves earth-born and not like the gods, the sons of heaven. Psyche is further described as the most beautiful of all mortals, so far surpassing all other earthly beings in loveliness that men venerated her as a goddess and made her offerings similar to those with which Venus, the mother of generations, was propitiated. The soul is thus represented as exceeding in perfection all other material bodies, its beauty being due to its proximity to the fountain of beauty, of whose harmonies it partakes and whose excellence it reflects into the inferior sphere. The poor perfections of the soul surpass the perfections of the body, even as the qualities of the superior nature surpass the qualities of form. In Book X of the Laws, Plato puts into the mouth of the Athenian stranger the following words, "And if this is true, and if the soul is older than the body, must not the things which are of the soul's kindred be of necessity before those which appertain to the body?" Cleinias answers, "Certainly." "Then," rejoins the Athenian, "thought and care, and mind, and art, and law will be prior to that which is hard and soft, and heavy and light." Here Plato emphasizes the doctrine of the excellence of the soul over the body, for the concerns of the soul are more noble, more lasting, and more satisfying than are the concerns of the mortal nature. As mental activity is more beautiful than physical activity, and virtue more excellent than pulchritude of person, so the ancients ascribed to the soul a transcendent and luminous beatitude. Sensing the felicity of this inner part, the outer nature regarded the soul as a divinity. In some cases, as the divinity. This misdirected homage is said to have vexed the higher gods, who, since they greatly Emerson's concept of the Oversoul 307, seed the virtue of the soul, should properly be the recipients of a fuller and more perfect devotion. If the gods, however, be impersonal principles, how shall we interpret that vexation which prompts them to divert their benevolence and leave the offending mortal deprived of their qualities? When man in his quest of realities exalts secondary natures such as the soul and loses sight of the divine origin and wholeness from which souls are suspended, he reaps for his imprudence irrationality, or the suspension of rational activity. Thus is his mind continually vexed by its own unsoundness, and such disquieted in the rational faculties is declared to represent an offended intellect or an indignant divinity. The goddess Venus manifests a twofold disposition. The superior phase liberates souls from material generation and elevates them to those superessential generations which subsist from the apex of the generating sphere. The other, and lower, phase of Venus inclines souls toward corporeality and binds them in servitude to the generating nature, for which reason the goddess was regarded by the ancients as a personification of carnality. The great dragon or monster whom the oracle prophesied was to become the husband of Psyche Sine, fide materiality, the mortal nature with whom she must be wedded at the time of her entrance into physical life. The fabulous monsters of the ancient mystery rituals such as Behemoth, Leviathan, and the Hippocampus all signified the mortal sphere that devours the souls descending into genera, and like the Minotaur claims for its own the fairest and bravest of every age. Psyche is led forth to the top of a high mountain, there to wed this strange creature decreed by the gods, that her spirit might be duly humbled, and that she might realize that only the immortals can escape the limitations of matter and the ravages of time. From this mountain top Psyche is borne downward by Zephyr, the west wind, into a beautiful valley.